questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. Leaders can't ignite their vision of meaningful change all by themselves, or they would. But others won't act unless they too can see what the leader sees could be, or at least have a glimpse of it. In this Illumify Game Changer episode, Jonathan answers the question that can ultimately determine whether his vision ever gets realized or not. So we're actually now reaching the 17th card in Amplify. There were 15 cards in Illuminate. We're at 17 with more to go in Amplify, which I think, Jonathan, I hope you'll see, is testament to all that is required to amplify as a leader. So could you read, please, the next card in the sequence?
What can't they see? What can't they see? Wanting to see and being able to see are two very different things. You have a unique perspective based on your role, experience, expertise, and insight. Others may not be able to see what you see. What do you know that they need help seeing? What can't they see? What can't they see?
A very simple, I think, illustration of this, and maybe this will help, Jonathan, is when we look at the word perspective, you have a unique perspective. Can you envision yourself standing in, what's your favorite mountain range?
Probably, I mean, the one closest to home is the Pennines, part of England's backbone running up.
Describe a peak within the Pennines, because I don't know what they look like.
These are not the Rocky Mountains of North America.
But they're still mountains.
But green.
Craggy green.
Yes. Sometimes desolate, shrouded in fog. Ah. We're into the 19th century romantic novel here.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff. Rivers. Valleys. So, you know, in true English style, perhaps harsh and craggy at times, but also with green.
With green. And so they're not snow covered.
At times, and you know, as you go further up the country, yes. At times, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. So choose one of those peaks to stand on and describe it for us, please. How high up are you, for one thing?
Oh, now now you're exposing me to a level
dear.
Of
well, vertigo. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Let's take vertigo out of this. Imaginary.
But also, I'm talking because of my, you know, having left my home country some time ago. I'm speaking, you know, from memory a little bit.
It's okay. We won't know any different.
Yeah. Yeah. High enough that villages seem very, very small.
Very small. In the distance?
Yes, and where you can't see the people, really.
Okay, so you can't see faces away.
No.
You're high enough up.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you look to your right, is there another peak of the exact same magnitude or height?
Yes, there might be. You know, the other side of the valley, yeah.
The other side. So far enough away? How far away?
It would perhaps be half a mile to the other
okay.
side.
Oh, okay. So not just beside you, not 20 feet to your
no,
right.
No. Yeah.
So you're standing on yours and you look across a mile or so away and there's someone else standing on another peak. Mm. Even in this case, your peaks are of equal size, height-wise. What do you see when you look from your peak?
A question. Who's this?
When you're looking at that other person?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Is it clear that it's not a bear?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm seeing somebody in a, you know, perhaps in a bright cagoule.
Okay. And beyond them, around them, to your right, to your left, describe the landscape. What do you see? What's the big picture you see? Standing exactly where you're standing.
Mm. Well, perhaps a river down below in a village, a river that's turned white. Because of
white water,
the descent, yeah, over rocks and
rough water, relatively,
yeah,
okay,
and then perhaps the cozier image of a village, too far away to see faces, people, but you can see the smoke rising from chimneys, lights,
and that's all coming because you're standing at a particular place, you have a particular perspective.
Yes.
All around you.
Yes.
What about the person a mile away? What does that individual see?
Mm.
They see exactly what you see?
Mm. I wouldn't assume that.
Okay.
No. Wouldn't necessarily.
They're facing in the opposite direction?
Yeah, they're not looking at me.
Okay.
Mm.
All right. So they're saying something different.
Mm.
Now, take your gaze down to the very base of your mountain.
Yes.
And you see someone standing there in the distance.
Yes.
Do they see what you see?
No. No.
They have a different perspective.
They do. And I would imagine that they wouldn't see me at all for a start.
Right.
There's this sense of looking down at somebody. And it would be very odd if they suddenly looked up at the same time and saw me.
Okay.
I'm looking down on somebody leading their life, walking along.
Yeah. Eyes to the ground.
To the ground, oblivious to, certainly to where I am.
Yeah, and maybe to where the other
individual
is.
Going about
their
business
is.
In some way, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Maybe focused on just putting one foot in front of the other as they they don't stumble down the street.
Yeah.
Do you see how you have a different perspective from each of those other two?
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a little exaggerated, needless to say, but that captures you as a leader having a distinct perspective from other people. You see what you can see and they cannot see it yet. Mm. And your ability to engage and to align them with view to acting in the ways that will make your vision realized. Mm. Depends on their ability to at least see some of what you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you do that? And what do they see now? Mm. Now, can you go back to that card?
Others may not be able to see what you see. What do you know? What do you know that they need help seeing? I'm going to take one example because it's been top of my mind recently, and it was very much about seeing. And it's an answer which says people can need help seeing something because it matters and they don't see that it matters.
Oh, it matters and they still don't see it.
Right. So it's something where physically they could not see it. It's out there in the open. The example I'm thinking about is something that happened to me recently in Copenhagen. I walked into the Central Railway Station, as I have done. I do it 3 or 4 times every week. It's a very pleasant experience. I love walking into that building. It's a beautiful old building with a wooden roof. It always smells good to me. Coffee.
Yeah, there's good coffee in there.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very welcoming station. The hustle and bustle of people going to work, people backpacking with their bags and backpacks, all sorts of people in there. And to my great joy and sense of growing sense of local pride for the last 18 months, the 40 or 50 or 60 Danish flags, which I think are always in there. I assume they are always in there. It's in some ways it's the nation's central station, not only Copenhagen's. For the last 18 months or so, each one of those Danish flags has been accompanied by a Ukrainian flag. And about 2 weeks ago, I walked in and they were gone. The Ukrainian flags were all gone. And I felt a real, it was a shock. I mean, for a few seconds, I was wondering, hang on, what's happened? I couldn't see what had changed. I could not see what had changed.
Was it like a gut punch for you?
It was like a gut punch. And for a few seconds, I couldn't figure out what it actually was. And then, I mean, this is only a matter of 2 or 3 seconds. Yeah, I didn't have to stand around for long. Suddenly I realized that all the Ukrainian flags had been taken down. And the sense of shock only deepened. And it wasn't anger. It was a sudden deep, deep sadness within seconds. Because my brain had quickly worked out, not why, but perhaps some part of me had dreaded this, having read the news and having read about flagging support across Europe and North America. And the reason I give this example is because how could people not miss the sudden disappearance of 40 flags of a very different colour? Because you have the red and white of the Danish flags and the yellow and blue.
Yeah.
But how could you miss that? And so what I did is I went home that day and wrote in Danish in my...
That's impressive.
In my learner's Danish, with the help of Google, obviously, but I wrote it myself with some help, and trying to figure out who I would send it to. And I sent an email to the National Railway Company, and also, from what I could gather on the internet, was the company sort of running the station. I now realise my error that I should have also sent an email to the city council. That's the one I didn't send to, and I still may. Anyway, cut a long story short, I still haven't received an answer to this day.
The flags are still gone.
They're still gone, and my email wasn't an angry one. It was expressing this sadness and saying I felt really proud as a newcomer, as a new Copenhagener, felt very proud to see these flags, and just felt a huge sense of loss. Their disappearance. Now, why am I giving this example? Because sometimes what we see or what we don't see is not the physicality of the thing, but whether it matters or not. And I felt that this mattered, and I do still feel that it matters deeply, because symbols matter. And so as I've seen the Ukrainian flag around not only Denmark, but all parts of Europe and my home country, the United Kingdom, here in North America, as I've seen it regularly in public places displayed with pride, it's just filled me with a sense of hope and the simple knowledge that you know that thousands and hundreds and thousands of your fellow citizens are seeing the same thing every day. It matters, that matters. So when the symbol disappears, that matters too, sadly, for the wrong reasons. So I'm saying this as my first answer here is, you know, the card is asking the question, what can't they see? What do you know that they need help seeing? And my first answer is helping to see what matters. So this is not so much things which are invisible or which have not been brought to the surface, but which are out there and which are visible, but people are somehow not seeing, feeling the significance. I'm sure I wasn't the only person that saw this and noticed this in Copenhagen, I'm sure. And I would hope not the only person who tried to contact the authorities to ask why. So that's my first answer here.
I want to just do a sidebar, please, on symbols, because you've raised it.
Mm.
And there is really interesting research. An entire book I read once about the importance of symbols when you're speaking. Because even when you're speaking about an important, incredibly important concept or idea, if at the same time that your words are being transmitted, there is something tangible listeners can lock on to make your words more concrete. So, for example, if you were, I don't know, an obscure example, but if you're speaking about ancient Greece and you hold up a sculpture of a Roman or a Grecian figure, rather, or an urn or something like that, it can directly connect you conceptually to, and them conceptually to what you're talking about. So if the flags are a symbol of something, solidarity perhaps, and then they're removed, now we've got a void, no words and no symbol. And do commend yourself for taking action on that, Jonathan, because you see that it matters. Continue, please.
I'm also looking at this idea of unique perspective and how you describe it here on the card, which resonates with me. It makes sense to me. You have a unique perspective based on your role, experience, expertise, and insight. I like that. It speaks to a range of, you know, what do we pick up as we go through life? What do we pick up? What do we absorb? What do we combine as we go along, taking the baggage that we start life with, our genetic inheritance, our upbringing, our education, what our parents and grandparents instilled in us in terms of ideas, virtues. So you take that and then you combine it with what you learn at school and then friendships. I think that's really interesting. And I would want, in answer to this question, that I help to shine a light on something because of the way I have approached that idea of learning. What I mean by that is, if I have often alluded to popular culture in our conversations, music, the novel, live performance, and the meaning. The meaning of live performance, the ritual of live performance, how that has a very strong echo in watching your football team in a stadium together. The reason I mention that is that for me, that's an important part of experiencing the world, but also learning about the world. It's all that part of learning which is not academic, which is not conceptual, which is not philosophical, but is through your lived experience and where you yourself are tapping into truths about how we live, what it means to be human, what matters. I'm a great believer that we can learn so much from great novels, but also I've seen, you've talked very eloquently there, Marianne, about leadership. I've seen a type of leadership in the men who have led my football club as coaches, head coaches, very rarely, sadly, very rarely, my fellow fans will share that sentiment. But when it is there, and when that leadership goes beyond the techniques of managing the team, but speaks to who we are, who the club is, its role within the community, the ability to break with assumptions about the club and where and how the sport is run at the moment, and watching a man trying to do things on his terms and often against the tide is wonderful to watch. So the reason I'm mentioning all of this is that way of learning and picking up different lessons from very different parts of our social and cultural life, I think, I hope, would infuse my vision with a certain understanding, but would also help me, as I come back to this card, would also help me to help others to see things, mm-hmm. and maybe to feel things.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk about feeling first.
Yeah. The more sentient your vision can be, the more it will appeal to a variety of people. You know, we are sentient human beings. Damasio, the great neuroscientist, said we're not just feeling beings, we're not just thinking beings. We just happen to be feeling beings who also think. But predominantly we're feeling beings. Yeah. So if that's the case, then how do you evoke the feeling? Then you know which of those sentiary experiences to invoke for that. Yes. And I want to say, this word has just come up for me, composite, because as you spoke, Jonathan, about all the different experiences and expertise, and reading from the card, you know, the insights and your role, experience, expertise, and insights give you a particular perspective on something, and on, in this case, your vision. So all of that, as we walk through our lives and we experience these different things, we then become a composite of those things, mm-hmm. of those experiences. Mm-hmm. And if I look at the definition as a noun, a composite is a conceptual whole made up of complicated and related parts. A conceptual whole made up of complicated and related parts. And does anyone in your life, whether you know them now or you could ever meet them, be comprised of the exact same composite of parts of experiences and expertise and roles and insights? And that's why I say we are distinct, each and every one, starting with that sacred dignity. We are distinct from each other, and by virtue of that distinction, that composite of complexity of parts that we are, it gives us a particular perspective from which we can see. And in fact, the origin of the word composite, 14th century, is to come together and to place. So when you see what you see, and you see that they're not privy to that same perspective, then that helps you identify what they can't see that matters to the realization of your change, the ignition of your change. You won't be able to see everything they see or cannot see, but it helps you, from the perspective of your change, identify, when you know the parts that matter, which parts in their composite might be missing that you have to help them see. But the challenge here is, what we see, who we are, what we see, all of those things that come from our composite, that's just basic to us. Like, that's who we are. We don't question it. It's integrated into us, depending on what it is. It's an integral part of us now. So it takes different level of sight, first of all, to observe in yourself, to see in yourself what enables you to see your vision, and then to be able to see, to discern whether it's present in others or not, even among your closest friends and family. So, because if they can't see it, they will not act.
That really strikes a chord with me. I think it brings us back to metaphor as well. I loved, Marianne, how you were talking about the route from language to action.
Mm-hmm.
At the heart of leadership, it starts with language, and from language we go to action. Metaphor is on that path somewhere, where, as I was saying in our previous conversation, metaphor can. Not always, but metaphor has the ability, has the power to unlock the mind of our listener, maybe to get beyond the assumptions that might otherwise block out our vision, our idea. And metaphor, for me, I see it in my conversations with people. I'm constantly drawn to metaphors to illustrate something. I love doing that.
It's one of your superpowers.
It's a joy. It's a real joy of finding, and often the weirder the better.
That's
the more
good.
Outrageous,
the more obscure,
the more, obscure, the more outrageous, yeah. The better. Because why are you doing it? It's because you're desperately, desperately trying to find a way to get through. You're trying to find a different way, for all of us to see it. Just that the mysterious power of a metaphor, which we can't quite quantify, can't quite put our finger on it, but it's just incredibly powerful. And if I look at my own experience, I think that has come from partly this love of language for its own sake, the love of words for their own sake, but also wanting to go through life with a broad intake of experience and from different places. When I was a young man, I was quickly attached to the idea of balance, in the sense of loving sport but thinking, but I don't want only to do sport, but spending lots of time studying but seeing the dangers of that, constantly seeing dangers of too much absorption in one thing. So balance, not as a sort of milk toasty, wishy-washy, comfortable, reasonable equilibrium, but more a desire, a real desire to have, you know, giving importance to things. So feeling that film was really important, and that you could only understand some things through film, that only film could do certain things, in the same way that only the novel could do certain things, in the same way that only football, for me as a non-believer, could give me a church so that I could feel the deep sense of ritual and worship in a church that meant something to me. And live music was another portal, another doorway into a very healthy worship through live performance, through music, and finding heroes on the stage. So all of these things are ways which have helped me to see, and I would hope that if they were harnessed to a vision and a desire to communicate the vision and bring people into it, that these things would help. Again, it's deliberately provocative and open. What can't they see? People can see. People can see everything. But I think where I'm reading your question and understanding it and linking it to the vision is helping people to see things in a different way, but also to see what lies beyond. That's what a metaphor is about, helping to see what lies beyond here.
And a vision, your vision is beyond what is now.
Yes, yes. And as I started with the Ukrainian flag, seeing why this matters, this, on the surface, this may seem innocent. On the surface, this may seem like a small thing, but...
It's actually quite the declaration, really, when you think about it. It's declaring through the removal that this no longer matters.
Yeah, yeah.
Our alignment, our side-by-side flags, the alignment that evokes is no longer. So it actually is saying a lot. If that, now, it could be that was the intention, but it could be maybe it was not the intention. Maybe someone decided, I don't know, it was time to replace them with Christmas baubles. Who knows?
I think it is that. Yeah. I think it's Christmas. Yeah. Christmas is coming.
We've always put those Christmas whatever up in that space. We have to take the flags down to make room for Christmas.
Yeah.
Was it an act of symbolism or deletion of symbolism, or was it just an everyday sort of decision? But it speaks volumes to you because those flags side by side matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, when you speak of the power of metaphor to convey what they cannot see, let's go back to your vision. And the question, the starting point in some ways, is can they see what a shared home looks like? Can they see it from, again, those different perspectives? Some of them have had a home, some have never had a home, and some have shared a home not happily, and some have never shared. Like, there are so many different experiences of what a shared home could even be that the concept of a home itself could be incomprehensible to some. They can't even imagine what it looks like, let alone to be in it, let alone the concept of a shared home. Mm-hmm. The concept of dignity, mm-hmm. sacred, may be completely mm-hmm. foreign to them. So if they can't see it, it is not going to be a desired new reality. Mm-hmm. And if it isn't going to be something in pursuit of for them that they can see worthy of pursuing, they're not going to pursue it.
Mm-hmm. How about taking yourself off of the mountain for a moment and entering into a scene in a movie? Specifically the scene where the woman is in the grocery store opening the can and feeding herself.
Is it Scarlett Johansson? Is it Scarlett Johansson?
I have no idea. I haven't seen it.
I'm just curious. Remember? Just curious.
The one in England. The one that you were telling us about. What was the name of that one?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah.
Oh, that, was that a right. foreign film?
No, it was Ken Loach.
Oh, right. Okay.
Ken Loach, yeah. Daniel Blake.
Okay. So I can guarantee you that if you fill a room with people who are watching the same scene, you are going to see something that none of them do. And yes, that can go across the board. Having said that, you see something that moves you every time you go back to that scene. When the others in the room do not feel as moved as you, it is not necessarily because their hearts are made of stone or they're demons sitting next to you in human bodies. It's because they don't see something that you do.
Yeah.
What can't they see in that scene that moves you so deeply that you would offer yourself to disseminating this vision, sharing this vision that could potentially change that scene, eradicate the need for that scene?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great. There's something here. I think there are two things going on. One is when you start to notice your own emotional reactions and think, oh, hang on, there's something moving, shifting within me here. I'm not quite sure what it is, but this means something.
And as you
said, if it's still moving me in the same way, 2 years later, 3 years later, 4 years, it's unlocked something inside me that is important.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think just recognizing that, and then you bring it up in conversation.
Yeah. What is it though?
This was one of your early cards, Marianne, about heartache. Where do you see the heartache? And we didn't go straight from there to the Ken Loach film. The Ken Loach film came later. But I think that's part of the answer, Catherine.
What you see that they don't see leads to your heartache. What is it that leads to it?
Well, I think it's allowing yourself to really feel it.
I do, and I don't feel a heartache.
Right.
Do you?
No.
No, you. You, what do you see that we don't?
When you first described it, Jonathan, you know, I speak for both of us or all of us, it was clear that you were really moved by it. And you spoke about it. You put words around it, but it didn't move us.
No.
So
it's a great example of seeing and not seeing. Absolutely. Yeah,
exactly.
You had to be there.
You had to be there. Yeah. Or you have to paint it more vividly with your words so we feel as if we were there.
Sure. In that particular scene, it's just so we do record this here. It's a mix of it's motherhood. The fact that it's a mother, I think, is clear. The fact that it's a mother who is so desperate that she's having to feed herself first. I don't think she has a child in the room with her. I can't remember, but whether or not that's the case, it's a mother who is so desperate herself. She has to feed herself.
Now, just what you've said, a mother, you know, Catherine and I are both, each of us is a mother, and yet it didn't evoke that in us. And yet, you know.
I can appreciate how it could.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And it's so not as though your job is to evoke that emotional response in everyone.
No, it's
at
not.
All.
No. So keep going.
It is an interesting exercise, though, to find that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Throbbing heart of pain in that scene.
Yeah, because there's a big, important clue to yourself there.
Yeah. The most obvious one, particularly in the context of a Ken Loach film, is the national story. So national shame. You know, this is my country.
We're back to shame again.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a boomerang sometimes,
it's really written through this scene in so many ways. I think I remember saying to you at the time, her shame is our shame here. You know, we as the viewer, I take her shame here.
Why not embarrassment? If you're looking at this at a national level too, why, and is it legitimate and valid that you go to shame? Where I look at my role, for example, where we've come to, the people who are using these funny words, my people kind of thing, is a debilitated state of forgetting. I don't go to shame. If I go anywhere, I mean, if I were to like have to talk to upper management, I think I'd hit a bit of embarrassment, but not shame. So
not mortification.
No, not that either. That would be a little too it's your path, my path kind of thing. But in this case, especially since you brought up the national issue that it presents, why not the embarrassment then?
Something tells me that in our library of emotions, embarrassment and shame are very close to each other. I think they're associated.
I'll look up shame as we speak.
Yeah. And these things, I think the proximity of emotions is important. Our brains work like that. Our brains want to quickly go from one idea to the next, for example. The brain is constantly looking for associations so it can step from one stone to the next across the stream quickly. The mind darts like that, looks for associations, sometimes haphazardly. I don't think there's always a logic in this. I think it's just hardwired to look for association.
I'm struggling to see an association between shame and embarrassment.
Really?
Because I see the origin of those two things being very different.
Yeah.
You can be embarrassed. You can be embarrassed by the actions of others. Give an example. I used to blush when I was young.
Oh, yeah.
I was the only woman, young woman, in a sea of men at a meeting. I'd feel conspicuous.
Yes.
And when they would ask me questions and I would speak up, I could feel my cheeks getting red.
Yes, I know that feeling.
Right?
Yeah.
That wasn't shame.
No, that's sure, absolutely.
Right? And shame is when, to me, when you've done something which you know to be wrong, whatever wrong is for you, whether it's a falsification of who you are, there's shame there. Because you're being less than who you are, who you know to be.
I feel like this is a moment where the feather and the bomb might show up.
Okay, go for it.
So shame is associated with, and I won't go through all of the definitions, but it's associated deeply with inadequacy, guilt, and dishonor.
Mm.
The feeling of
inadequacy,
and guilt and dishonor.
Yeah.
Embarrassment is making the inadequacy and guilt public.
Wow. So private versus public?
A little bit.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Wow. Making the inadequacy public or the shame?
Inadequacy and guilt.
And guilt, but not...
Shame being defined as components of inadequacy, guilt. Right.
So if I look to what the filmmaker...
Yes.
Is trying to do here. So what Ken Loach is trying to do. I'd love to know what he thinks about this. What I think he thinks is that there is no way around this other than to show the desperation, the hunger, the real hunger, the famine of this young woman in a food bank who simply cannot stop herself from opening a can and feeding herself. He feels it's an artistic choice which says, I have to show this.
Before feeding the child.
I'm staying away from that detail because I can't remember.
Okay.
I can't remember. The reason I mentioned child is because in answer to your question about trying to understand why this had meant and continues to mean so much to me, I can't help but see motherhood here, and that particularly motherhood as being a central theme in the novel that I'm finishing. That may be part of why it resonates so much now, in our conversations now. I think that's there. I think also going back to our previous conversation about perspective, so the unique perspectives that we acquire as we go through life. Mm-hmm. For me here, it's been, and I know this really does mark me out from my friends a little bit. Not all of them, but it's from an early age, and it's for both music and film, needing these things so much, needing music and film, where I think by my late teens, music and film for me had ceased to be entertainment. I think by the time I got to 18, I probably had destroyed the idea that these were forms of entertainment. And I was absolutely convinced that my rock heroes were mostly here to save the world or save me, you know, so that this idea of your heroes as not being great entertainers, but people who are actually going to save the world or your little part of it. Now, that's not unusual for a teenager, okay? The fact that I've carried that into my 40s and now my 50s, that probably makes me a bit weird. And I don't actually think that, and yet. So come back to the film. This is not film. This is what I see. This is not really film. This is real. This is happening. And that's not just because it's a Ken Loach film and he makes very political films. It's because for me, and it's the same with books. I think if I'm honest, I feel it more strongly with film, that it matters. This stuff really matters. So it's a love of film, a love of music, particular times of the music that really resonates with you and unlocks the deepest emotions. It's not all music, the music that you love most. It's the idea that you give meaning to these things. So you're not consuming the music, you're not consuming the film, you're not consuming the book. You are letting it become part of you and you are giving meaning to it. You give meaning to what you're listening to. And that makes it even more important. So the next time you listen to it or watch it, it has an even greater effect on you. We talked about this briefly in London. I'm deeply attached to this idea of the relationship between the listener, the reader, and the artist, where there's a back and forth, and we go back to the piece of work, the art that we love, and we absorb it, and we love it even more. We put it away, but then the next time we come back, the next time we listen to it, it feels even stronger, and so our reaction is even stronger. So we end up being in a virtuous circle of gathering strength, gathering emotion. So we're in a relationship with the artist. So where does that all of that come from? Giving something meaning, saying to yourself, I don't try and convince other people about this, but it's saying to yourself, this matters. This is not film. Okay, the medium is film. I'm sitting in a cinema and there's either celluloid film or digital, but this is not film, really. Same with music. It's not, there's something else here. Okay.
So let's say your vision is that work. What would you like your audience to give to it?
Are you staying in the realm of music and film there?
Giving your vision the category of a work of art, something of meaning.
I couldn't say that about my own vision, but I'm in answer to the question here. I think this is helping me to understand how I might be able to help others to see. You know, this is how we get to metaphor, partly through your own stock, your own personal stock of images and music and songs and film scenes that you have acquired over time and which has power because you have decided, you have given it meaning.
So in looking at this question, Jonathan, which is what can't they see? If you can recognize first and foremost, they have a different perspective than you do. And then if you can figure out when they can't see, it's different perspective, of course, but it can also be almost the same to a degree, the same perspective, but what they see, they don't want to look at. They don't want to see it. So can they see it? Yes, but they don't want to see it. So in any case, if they don't see it, they will not think and act on it to help realize it. So this is where it takes your own acuity to look and to see, where can we connect first? Where can I align their vision with mine? And then move them, even nominally at first, that first 18 inches of new ground.
Yeah. Yes.
So that they can see that. They can't see for miles and miles around. They can't see the vantage point you have from that mountain peak. But let them see something. So do you see that your responsibility as a leader is to enable them to see what they need to see, that they don't?
I do.
That will move them to that new ground.
I do, and I think I can only do this. I can only do this now here because you, I think, Marianne, have given me a way through that door, through language. Mm-hmm. You give me a lot of confidence to do that through language. You know, the last parts of our conversation have been about language and the power of language. Mm-hmm. Through that, yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's absolutely great. When we are traveling to a place we've never been before, we need some markers on how to get there, how to recognize it when we arrive. If you've ever driven on an American highway, it sounds like I'm picking on Americans, I'm truly not, but there is a difference here. I noticed that they don't tell you where, how many more miles or kilometers in our case, how many more miles the destination is. They don't, and I don't know why that is. Maybe it's changed in recent years, but you drive along knowing that, you know, Philadelphia is 4 more hours of driving, for example. And it's incumbent on you to know where you're at each step of the way. Now, you also have to be able to recognize when you're in Philadelphia, having never been there before. So similar, if your vision is of Philadelphia and you're telling people, we're all going to Philadelphia, help them first see where they're heading. Mm-hmm. Why, of course, the difference it'll make, but what does it look like? Mm-hmm. So that they know what they're striving to reach and they'll know when they get there, or that it's even worth the trip, the travel. And remember, we spoke about how a phenomenal vision unifies people, binds them together in a common goal or purpose. Because in working together, thinking and acting in the ways that'll help realize it, they are now a collective, right? And so that means, and this is my point, long belabored, that everything they do every day could contribute to that. It gives meaning to the most trivial actions. Mm-hmm. So that's why they need to see what it is, your job, and your ability to ignite your meaningful change rests largely on that. Hard work of leadership, Jonathan, but you, again, have an advantage with your words. Thank you.
Thank you.
Metaphor played a big part in this conversation. First, to place Jonathan atop a mountain to help him see his unique perspective. Then, to illustrate that when viewing one of his beloved films in a crowded theater, a particular scene that is so moving to him may not be to anyone else, not even his closest companions. And finally, as the means, his superpower even, to reach them and help them see beyond what is. And that's vital to a leader with a vision of what could be, but isn't yet. because if we don't see it, we will not act to help realize it. It's all too easy to assume that because we see it, others do too. But we are each a composite of different experiences, expertise, and insights, all of which gives us a unique perspective. We therefore may see what others don't. It's a critical distinction and one that can make or break every leadership initiative. These last few Amplify questions have confirmed for Jonathan the importance of language to leadership. And that's right, it is. The challenge for him now and for every leader is to discern how to use language to help others see the vision of what could be. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.